And welcome to another episode of that 401k podcast. This is our 30th episode anniversary. We should have done a logo or something. It's Ari Rosenbaum here with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Only, what, 70 more? And we're looking at syndication?
I don't know about syndication, but it always reminds me of, like, how, you know, every single time WWE Raw's got, like, an anniversary or something, they have to, if it's a 1,000th episode, or their 2,000th, or 25 years, they always have to have some sort of celebration. So, might as well announce it that it's our 30th episode. How are you? I didn't get to see you this week at our favorite stomping ground.
I know. You were out doing the conference world. Right?
Yes, I was with my friends at Lincoln Financial in Boston, Matt Kessler. I got to give a shout out to him, Cassandra Churchill. I always give out a shout out to her. I was there at their behest doing some plan advisor conferences, and it was really funny because one of the TPs that they work with over there, Compass, I think it was, and Seth at Compass, who was a great guy. And he says, oh, how'd you get, you know, Ari, you do a lot of these? I said, no. I said, you know, Matt was like the first one from, you know, Lincoln to reach out to me and ask me if I wanted to do this. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So he was shocked, and it was funny because we're all laughing because Matt just approached me, and that's how it really all started. So it was great being there. Always great to be in Boston. I stayed near Gillette Stadium. Gave me the opportunity to plug our event at Gillette Stadium on October 11th. That 401k conference at Foxborough, Gillette Stadium. Tickets are available online at that 401ksite.com. I stayed at the hotel, the Hilton Garden Inn, so that's probably where I'm going to book hotel spots for everybody for that event. Nice new hotel. They really niced up the area over there by Gillette. You know, they have an outdoor kind of mall over there with restaurants, movie theater, and all that kind of stuff. Might actually bring out the family because I think it's Columbus Day weekend that weekend. So.
It is.
So, might come out, you know, have them play around over there for the day of the conference and maybe do something in Boston that weekend. We'll see. You know, maybe the Red Sox will be in the playoffs again, you know, the way they're going.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
It's possible. I can win the wild card.
thank you. Yankees are winning the East. Appreciate that, all right?
Well, you got to root for the New York teams.
Did you catch any opening day? I know you were working yesterday, but you watch any?
It was a kind of a bummer to do that, but thanks to my friends at T-Mobile, I got a free subscription for a year of MLB TV. So. One of the events for that I was supposed to do yesterday was like dinner. It was canceled, and I couldn't get an early flight, so I actually was at the airport. I was watching a whole bunch of MLB TV, you know, games here and there. Right, was watching the Reds game. I was watching Padres Giants. Couldn't get to see the Mets game because it finished up before I was done. And the worst thing, there are worse airports to stay in than Logan for about 4 or 5 hours. You know, they had my Boston Beer Works. They had a location over there, which I haven't been there in like 20 years. They have a spot out by Fenway. It was a lot of fun. And of course, now just coming back after a couple of days, just a lot of conferences in action. Signed a contract to have the event at AT&T Stadium, Dallas, Texas, December 13th. That's a Friday. Couldn't do the 4th. I think they're doing the preparations for the Big 12 game, I think, so we couldn't do it that day. That's going to be fun in Dallas. Of course,
breaking news, right? Yeah, right off breaking the press. News.
Yes, exactly. So it's going to be a little pricier, so, you know, may have to increase the amount of speakers, maybe add one more or something to pay for it because they're a little bit more money than some of the other stadiums, but we'll deal with it. Should be a lot of fun, Dallas. Not a big Cowboys fan. I do have a Roger Staubach blue jersey, which is the old hexed, you know, cursed jersey that they used to wear. So that's the only jersey I have for the Cowboys. I'll wear that day. And, of course, the other events, we're going to be in Atlanta in 2 weeks. We actually have to book airlines for that. We got to book we'll talk about that. We'll probably have to get off of JetBlue for that one and fly Delta. So we're 2 weeks we'll be in Atlanta, which should be a lot of fun, at SunTrust Park. Got the Braves-Mets game. We've got people signing up for it, which is great. Kansas City, May 3rd. We got a game there, May 2nd. It's going to be a 1 o'clock start. Unfortunately, the schedule doesn't work out for us, but you and I will be there.
You will?
Yeah, so you're not going to go to a game? You're gonna come in Thursday night?
For Atlanta?
Not Dallas. Kansas City.
Oh no, Kansas City. I'll come out for the game. Atlanta's more of a challenge for me because there's a bunch of things. I'm not very good at keeping track of dates.
Join the club.
Yes.
Join the club.
Personal dates.
Yeah, do that all the time.
I got my daughter's science fair that night, and then the next day is my son's birthday, and I've got my daughter's theater showcase. Well, so I'm trying to make it work.
I'm going to leave like Saturday morning because I don't think the flights work out later after the game, and I just don't want to run out. It's Delta, JFK, they got a lot of flights.
The game's Friday? It's after the conference.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not before.
Okay. Got it.
And then, of course, we'll be in Denver. I got to put that up on our website for signing up for it this weekend. Toying with the idea that the game will be free. Probably will be free. I just got the game tickets in the mail today. What's cool about these tickets, the tickets are like a 200 level seat. Okay, so they're not the greatest seats. The beauty of the Rockies tickets is that not only do you get to go to the game against the Padres, they're also throwing $10 food on the ticket too. So
that's great. So just think of the ball players you're going to see in that game, right? You're going to see Manny Machado. You're going to see
Fernando Tatis Jr., who got his first hit.
Tatis Jr., Will Myers. You got, who else do the Rockies have?
Charlie Blackman.
And you're one of Jason's favorite ball players, right?
Daniel Murphy, so yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be a fun event. We're doing that. I got to talk to Cleveland about September. October, of course, we talked about Foxborough. So, anyway, let's get to today's show. Today's show is kind of it's going to be a lot of sarcasm, but really it's an idea of the topic is A Plant Provider's Guide on How Not to Die, based on an article that's coming out in a couple weeks. It's based on my relationship with my old law firm, and it's going to be a lot of sarcasm, and as Dan said to me before, can't you let this thing go? And the answer is no. I have to beat it into the ground. And I'm not the type of person who says, you know what, I told you so. I hate people like that. But, you know, when you feel like you've been treated poorly or you failed when you thought you should have succeeded, and there were things why you thought, you know, if had you had the power to do certain things, you would have succeeded. And it's just like, I hate to fail, I hate to lose. You know how I stress out.
I do.
You know, so this is really basically tips on, you know, plan providers on how not to die. Looking at my old law firm and seeing that it's dying, that, you know, it's a third smaller than when I left. The manager attorney, Lois, really ran it into the ground. And, you know, there's always a hidden joke. Anytime you would read my articles, there'd be a line about, sorry, Lois. That's a joke referring to her. And actually, if you go to teespring.com or check out my LinkedIn page, we do have Sorry, Lois t-shirts from betforeignksite.com. I got to add it to the site anyway, but including the I'm a TPA t-shirt, which I've sold a couple. I got a Sorry Lois t-shirt, which I ordered and was wearing it in Boston. So that was a lot of fun. But anyway, this is really, again, based on my experience working at my old law firm and things that, you know, are universal to plan providers and things that they really shouldn't do. Number one, relying on a name and prestige. You see that a lot with law firms. You see that a lot with big accounting firms or even big plan providers. You know, a firm that's well-known and just relying on that name to sell services and not really understanding that while the name may mean something to some people, there has to be quality behind the service. So it's, you know, it's like, you know, Lois would drive a Jaguar and with all due respect to the people who drive Jaguars, the fact that I found out that she drove a Jaguar made me understand, it's my belief that anybody who owns a Jaguar these days doesn't really care about quality, in the sense that, yeah, Jaguar is a fantastic-looking car, really expensive, luxurious, but when you compare it to the Lexuses of the world and Mercedes and BMWs and, you know, the luxury brands, even Cadillac, I think that Jaguar is a brand to me that doesn't really stand for quality. It's a great name, but, you know, it goes back to the fact when my aunt had like an 81 Jaguar, 12-cylinder engine, and it drank gas like, you know, some people drink, you know, alcohol. And there was a time, I'll never forget, where she had problems with her wiper blades, and she couldn't get wiper blades for like 3 months. So she couldn't drive in the rain for like 2 or 3 months because they had to get it from England. But, you know, it's really important that no matter the services you provide as a plan provider, just because you have a great name in the industry doesn't mean you can just rely on it. You actually have to have a quality service behind the name, because otherwise plan sponsors are going to really know that your brand name stands for garbage, stands for poor service. So it's really important, because plan sponsors need quality plan services at a reasonable fee. The fact that their, you know, TPA or their 401k financial advisors got some kind of fancy brand name doesn't mean anything if the service is lacking. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, in some cases, and, you know, the whole all due respect thing, we'll extend that here as well. You know, if you're a broker and you're working for one of the wirehouses, or you're a plan sponsor and your advisor works for one of the wirehouses, you're paying a premium for that, right? Mama Merrill, the Merrill Lynch of the world, the Edward Jones folks, they all have to pay the house, you know, X, in addition to what they're going to need to support their families. So generally, at least in my experience, I've found that folks are paying more for that perceived prestige of, you know, the name that you're referencing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's really important to understand that you just can't sit back and just, you know, let life stand behind a name and that's it. You actually have to provide a good service, so it's really important. The next one, really, this goes back, again, when I was at that law firm, I couldn't get a good handle. You know, the idea was I was trying to add a national ERISA practice to our firm, single employer plans, you know, work on a flat fee, that kind of thing. And the partners in the law firm didn't want me to talk to their clients for one reason or the other. I think it had to do with the fact that they were former sole proprietors, and they kind of held their plan events as their clients as a, you know, they just didn't want anybody to know who the clients were. So I said, okay, I can't do it that way. So let me try my hand at social media, you know, go on LinkedIn, write articles and all that kind of stuff. And the problem with that is we had an advertising committee of one person, and that one person wasn't even a partner, and he wasn't somebody brought in a dime worth of business. But he was trying to tell me that LinkedIn and Twitter and all that kind of stuff was advertising. And true proficient social media isn't advertising. It's all about building brand recognition. It's building opinion that you have expertise. It's that sort of thing. So, you know, when I would talk to Lois about it, you know, she would kind of like talk down about it. She would mention that her husband, who was a family law attorney, was doing it, and she's like, oh, I think he's getting clients out of it. But she always acted as that sort of that social media aspect of it was beneath the practice of law. And, you know, if you're listening to this, I mean, or if you've been to my events or you read my articles, you know that, you know, I'm only here because of social media. I'm not here for my good looks or lack thereof. You know, whatever I've done, you know, it goes back to social media. That 401ksite.com, the 401k conference, you know, all these things are from, you know, generated from social media. You know.
Yeah, so, you know, poor Lois, but, you know, she was wrong, right? I mean, it seems to be a recurring theme in some of these podcasts. She was wrong. Yeah. You proved her wrong in a ton of aspects. I mean, I think, too, and you know, you haven't explicitly said this, but I think there might be a little bit of a lack of humility upon Lois's part. You know, a little bit of pretension as it relates to certain things.
Yeah. You know, going out on social media and really, you know, producing articles and content to show that you're an expert, you know, there's nothing wrong with that because it makes you look good. You know, and being on social media isn't like, you know, this is a joke between, you know, you've been on Route 110. I think I might have made this joke with you. You know, being on social media isn't the same as selling lobsters out of the back of your car. Nope. That's a 110 joke because they do that on Route 110. There's like this place that does that. And that's a Sunrise Highway Valley Stream joke because there are actually people that sell fish out of the back of their truck. Now,
and watermelons. Don't forget about the watermelons. Well,
but it's not even fish. It's usually lobsters. It's, you know, it's not like they're selling salmon in the back. You know, it's usually lobsters. And there's nothing wrong with selling lobsters out of your trunk. It's just kind of weird that you're on the side of the road and just selling, you know, lobsters out of your trunk. You know, and, you know, again, nothing wrong with that, except maybe the Department of Health may visit you and check out how your trunk is, you know, whether you lined it up with garbage bags and you got ice in there or whatever it is. I've never gone that close up to one of these, you know, trunks or whatever. So, you know, social media really is a mechanism where you can provide content and, you know, engage with potential clients and spheres of influence. You know, that's my idea. You know, if the law firm partners weren't going to get me clients, then, you know, advisors and TPAs would. And why? Because I was producing content that advisors and TPAs could use for them to get clients. And, you know, you help people out, they'll help you out. It builds relationships. So it's nothing to sneeze at. There's nothing embarrassing about it. The only time it's embarrassing is when you sound desperate and you just want clients like upfront. By the way, who's your TPA? I mean, you know, if you're a TPA and you're talking to advisors, don't do that. You know, or, you know, it happens from time to time where I have an advisor wanting to meet with me to talk about my clients. I'm like, you know what? I know so many damn advisors.
Why would I pick you?
Why would I pick somebody I just know as opposed to somebody I've worked with who's referred me business and I've had a relationship with, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, you know, that's, you know, it's all, anytime you're meeting new spheres of influence, it's all about building trust, and that takes time. Right out of the box, they don't just refer you business. So, you know, social media to me is such an integral part of business because it was such an integral part of my business, and that's how, you know, I was able to speak at FI360 and Schwab Impact and being the Wall Street Journal, and again, you know, people following me, you know, it was strange. I was in Rhode Island for an event, and the people who hosted it was an Empowerment Prize office, and they wanted to take a picture with me for their website. I'm like, who, what? I mean, like, it's just funny sometimes how people, like, are amazed to see me, and they're big fans, and I'm like, what are you talking about? This is just ERISA stuff, you know? You know, I get wowed when I see Wade Boggs, or Andre Dawson. I don't, you know, really think of myself in that league, but I guess for ERISA, maybe for some people who
are there,
crazy,
you go.
For some people are crazy, well, about ERISA.
And, you know, in a similar vein, remember when we were out in California? Who is the TPA?
JD Carlson.
That had mentioned that he was using one of your articles whenever the ADPs of the world would try and muscle in, or there was a situation where they had a payroll provider, or TPA that was trying to do payroll as well, or a payroll provider was trying to do TPAing, and he would use your articles as expert testimony almost.
Yeah, that's one of the things that when I talked to Lisa Ann, my friend Lisa Ann, who was at the conference, you know, of course I'm name dropping here. But Lisa Ann said, "Oh, you know, one of the greatest things that happened was when JD spoke and said how, you know, you impacted his business, and you know, and she was kind of impressed by that." But, you know, there's nothing wrong with the old way of getting clients, you know, referrals and networking events when they work out, or, you know, literature tables or whatever you may be doing. But you should be really open to other avenues like social media, and there's nothing wrong with it. And, it, you know, it does take time, and, you know, we could always go, you know, we'll have probably another podcast about content and that sort of stuff. But it's really a effective tool of advertising. And speaking of JD, I reached out to him about the national event because I think in terms of his group with the Retireholics, it's probably, you know, I always say to him, I wish I had that idea so I didn't have to steal it. Because that pod, that video cast, that, you know, the broadcast that they do is really funny, really ingenious. And, you know, when we have our national event, you know, I'm in talks with him, we'll have Retireholics there. You know, he's a great mover and shaker. We, you know, our friends at EvoShare that we touted at the LA conference, he did a post on LinkedIn. And you had to see the attention that he got from other advisors who, you know, wanted to know about EvoShare. And the head of EvoShare, Eugene, picked up on it. And he's like, oh, I'm going to see you in Napa and that sort of thing. And, you know, JD is one of the great influencers. You know, they talk about recently Lori Loughlin's daughter, you know, Aunt Becky from Full House, and her, how her daughter is a big, was a big Instagram or YouTube personality, and how, you know, people would pay her for, you know, tweets and all that kind of stuff. You know, JD probably has another side business that he could work on where he could tweet about other plan providers and the services they offer, because he's a tremendous influencer. And there, it's from social media. And, you know, the first time I ever talked to him, I asked him, do people frown on the fact that, you know, you're doing these video casts and you're bringing beer into it, and, you know, the idea that you're not being serious about things? And I asked him that because of my experiences with Lois. And even goes back to the time when I was in moot court in the second year of law school, and I was wearing a Flintstones tie, and they're attacking me for wearing a Flintstones tie. That, you know, if you do anything that's different, that somehow you're making light of the industry. And he says, no. So, you know, again, social media, big tool. Next, not valuing employees. I've seen that with a lot of plan providers. I saw that with my old law firm. You know, not really treating employees with respect, not valuing them. You know, even at that practice, they had levels of partnership where you were a partner and you had no vote in partnership meetings. And there were actually partners, I learned later from talking to somebody who was a very big decision maker over there, not a lawyer, but he told me essentially that when I was there and I was an associate, I was making a lot more than one of the partners, which I thought was ridiculous. But that's how it was. And when he was making 125 and I was making, you know, at least 25,000 more, I was really embarrassing, I thought. And when he found out that if he could go to the city and make $50,000 more right off the bat, you know, he left. And they lost somebody who was really, really good, really, really young. You know, that was a huge problem. And, you know, I always say when you're dealing with the employee-employer relationship, there's no employee who ever lived who said that they get paid too much. And there's never been an employer who has said that they pay their employees too little. That's my opinion. That's the employee-employer relationship in a nutshell. In the middle is where they meet. But employees,
that's also known as the Rosenbaum Goldilocks theory.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Rosenbaum theory of union union employer relationships, because I was a union lawyer, and, you know, oh, they don't want to give me – well, listen, you can't admit that you ever get paid too much. I never got paid too much. Never. Never at all.
Right.
Never happens.
You're right.
Exactly. You're right. Never happened. So that's why I say in the history of man, I'm sure there are been – I'm going to get a tweet by somebody, oh, I thought I got paid too much. If you got paid too much, did you go and complain and say, I need a salary decrease? No. There was one time when I was working for Geller Group, and they gave me an interim salary increase, and then for the following year, I didn't ask for more than 10. Usually I ask for 10 each year, and we'd fight because they only offered me 5. There was one year where I said, I'll just take 5. I'm happy. And then, of course, that was like 3 months before I left, and the guy running the office, Manny, was just driving me nuts, and I had to leave. So the time I was actually satisfied with my pay, that was the time it was time for me to leave. That was, I guess, the coincidence. So, you know,
Murphy's Law.
You know, listen, I got paid well over there at that law firm, got a decent 401k plan over there. But what really bothered me is that, you know, Lois did not like me from day one. I mean, she had a look on her face like she was disgusted by me. Usually I have to give people reasons for that, and I do for a lot of people. But this was like one of the first times where somebody just didn't like me from the get-go. You know, like a school, like a school bully.
Hate's a strong word, but that's probably why Lois has been such an influential character in your career.
Oh, without a doubt, because I've had situations with bosses who were difficult, and you know, listen, I worked for a law firm partner before Meyer Suozzi. I was at this union law firm for 10 months, and I left after 10 months because I was working for this ERISA attorney, Janie, and she liked to work at 2 a.m, and I didn't because I lived on Long Island, and you know, leaving two in the morning only to come back at 7, that wasn't fun. But I won't disparage Janie. Janie was a brilliant ERISA legal mind. You know, as Don Rickles would say, you ask her, she'll tell you. But she really was a good ERISA attorney. So I'm not going to, you know, complain about her. You know, I left, but, you know, she was difficult to work for, whatever. But, you know, she was okay in my book. But Lois, yeah, because obviously she had a disdain for me, and she had a disdain for a lot of people. And, you know, over the course of the last few years, you've had partners leave and go to other firms. And, you know, whatever it is, your plan provider, treat your employees well. Treat them with a little respect. The respect goes a long way. And that's it.
Sure, sure. Now, and I mean, the only other thing I'd add, and this might, you know, be more of a macro kind of viewpoint, but especially in today's job market where people have genuine choices and they're, you know, seemingly unafraid to use them, you have to treat people a certain way. You have to, as a plan sponsor, offer them certain perks and benefits. You know, ultimately it's going to cost plan sponsors a lot more to replace those people, especially if they're quality people, than it would be just to, you know, keep a quality benefit program in place and then treat your people appropriately.
Exactly. Exactly. Next on the list is creating a bureaucracy. That's one of the worst things in any type of organization as a plan provider could really do, because I always find that bureaucracy chokes good ideas, it chokes new ideas, it chokes business, in my opinion. And I used to joke that when Lois didn't want to deal with a topic, she'd create a committee for it. And talking about social media, she said, "Okay, we'll have a committee for social media." So what did she do? She brought the partner on who was on the advertising committee, who didn't do social media and thought it was advertising. She brought in the tech guy who wasn't a lawyer and wasn't in advertising or marketing. And she went and put the two attorneys on, myself and a guy by the name of Jeff, who was an associate with me in the New York office. She didn't put us on the committee. And, of course, with these committees, they talk, and they don't do anything. So that's why I used to joke she would create a committee just because she didn't want to handle something or deal with it. So, you know, and from a business standpoint, one of the biggest problems I had was when I was writing articles for the law firm to try to generate clients. There was one article that took me 6 months to get approved because I had to work between three levels of partnership: the advertising committee, the ERISA attorney, the ERISA partner, and you know, Lois and the executive committee or whatever it is. So, you know, it took 6 months to write an article. And if you know anything about retirement plans, 6 months in the retirement plan business can be half a lifetime. It just goes quickly, and there's so many changes, and you could write an article and it goes poof. So whatever. You know, you got to create a lean machine that's not going to let good ideas be mothballed and sit and generate dust. And so that's why, my opinion, don't create a bureaucracy. Don't create levels, you know, like levels of peeling off an onion and you know, layers of an onion. don't do that, because it's a great way of stifling business, and that's bad for business. So, you've been involved in businesses with the bureaucracy. I mean, you're on your own now, so you have no excuse.
Yeah, I mean, I think our industry is not the most flat, right? I think there's a lot of unnecessary levels, a lot of unnecessary structure in our industry, and that leads to a lack of innovation. I think it happens too in hiccups, right? There was this period of time where the industry was looking at all the robo stuff, the Bettermans of the world, all that stuff. Folks thought that was all going to be disruptive, and it kind of petered out. I think now we're looking at all these different sort of ancillary, secondary kind of benefit vendors. We'll see what sticks, we'll see what doesn't, but that'll peter out. We haven't seen true change, and maybe, you know, the industry is just not designed for that. I don't know, but I do think the fact that there is a fairly established bureaucracy within, you know, some of the key players in our industry does lead to some stagnation.
Exactly, that's a perfect word, stagnation. I feel like it's like you bet your life we should have like the duck coming out with the word of the day. At least I think that's what it was. But anyway, that's an old reference to Groucho Marx's game show, not the Bill Cosby version. But anyway, next is not creating incentives to grow a business. This always drove me nuts. In my old law firm, when I was being hired, the partner that was trying to hire me told me, oh, you know, whatever business you bring in, you're going to get 50% of it. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. Turns out that was only for partners. The problem with that, well, first of all, I got screwed out of it. But the biggest problem with that is when you have origination, 50% of the billed amount, whatever business I would get from these clients that these partners got 50% credit for, I couldn't get any credit for it. That's how it worked. But it really didn't matter because I wasn't getting any money. But it was kind of funny to show how not creating incentives really kills people. I got invited by the top billing attorney at the firm, who was in the tax certiorari business, which is dealing with property tax grievances. He had a networking event, and I was talking to one of the bankruptcy partners over there, and you know, he attended the event, and he says, oh, I'm not going to bother to network with these people for bankruptcy business. And I said, why? And he said, because whoever I meet at these events, they belong to the top tax cert attorney. So, you know, he would get the origination fee. So, you know, I got kids who are going to school. I've got kids going to college, so I have to focus on origination fee. So this was a guy who was turning down law firm business and turning down billable hours because he wasn't going to get that 50% clip of the client because somebody else staked their claim. So, you know, that's really, you know, bad, you know, incentive. Great for the attorneys who bring in these clients, but, you know, sitting on their rear ends, and, you know, other attorneys trying to cross-sell, and they'll get the 50%, and the attorney cross-selling isn't going to get any credit. That's a disincentive. And it reminds me of Geller Group when I was at that TPA. Manny, who was running the office, who was, you know, I like Sheldon. You know, somebody's going to listen to this and tell him I said this, but I always liked Sheldon. His other partner, I didn't. The problem with his other partner was, he said, okay, if you bring me a client for the TPA, I will give you $350. The problem that I had with that is twofold. As a producing TPA, if I helped him sell a 401k client, they got a client that they're going to bill every quarter. So I'm selling that client for systematic quarterly billings for $350. I had a problem with that. I felt that, you know, if I'm going to do that, I should get part of the fee. That's how I saw it. When I told Rich the story, he thought I was crazy. You know, I said I should be like everybody else, including a well-known ERISA attorney who was getting paid basis points on an advisory fee. I will not mention their name, you know, at all, but they know who they are. They were getting paid a piece of the advisory fee. So I said, I should be like that. And he says, you're crazy. But then the problem was is that Manny would, you know, you'd get the I knew somebody who actually did that, got a client, and you'd actually have to chase Manny down for $350. He just didn't want to give it up. So, you know, $350 when a distribution package for a client is $75 each, or, you know, whatever, or a loan is like $150 or $125 or whatever it is. You know, I thought I should have deserved more than $350, and that's why I never brought a client in the 5 years that I worked there. What do you think about that?
Well, I got a couple of thoughts. I mean, the first thing that I agree with you entirely, wholeheartedly. The one thing that I have, I don't have the answer for that I thought could be an issue, is incentivizing advisors and how that works with their broker dealers. I just don't have the answer, and although I've wanted to, I just haven't found the time to reach out to, you know, a broker dealer and talk to their compliance people about something like that. But I do think, you know, that's the one part that needs to be fleshed out a little bit more.
Yes.
But absolutely. I mean, we're incentivized to do pretty much anything in this world, right? I mean, you're rewarded for using a certain credit card. You're rewarded for, you know, buying 10, you know, 9 cups of coffee, you get the 10th one free, all that stuff. So why would anything we do in this business be different?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you have to incentivize people.
Yeah, and if anyone out there knows that answer in terms of broker dealers, you know, and how they'd handle that, you know, hit Ari up on LinkedIn, shoot us an email. I would love to know that. Because that's something that, you know, we've thought about ourselves on the 316 side and, you know, some of the other projects that we're looking to introduce here in the future as well.
Absolutely. And last but not least, just thinking everything is going to last forever. You know, you can't think nothing is going to last forever. I mean, perfect example is Sears. Sears was the greatest retailer in United States history. Now it's a joke. Now it's on death's door, and it will die. It will die very quickly and shortly. You know, that's the problem. Amazon one day will die. They won't last forever. And that's the problem with plan providers. Nothing lasts forever. The business is always changing. If you're not ahead of the times, you're going to be behind the times. How many businesses and plan providers I've seen fail? How many large plan providers have we seen exit the business in the last 7 years? That's, you know, that's really it. You know, Shawshank Redemption, that's the movie that probably kept me sane for the last 2 years of law school. Because it was all, you know, it was more than just prison, because sometimes you are in a prison of your own mind. Sometimes you're in a different kind of prison. And my prison was law school. And, you know, you get busy living or you get busy dying. And we've seen so many plan providers who've succeeded because they changed with the times. And we've seen other providers just die off because they couldn't work out in a transparent universe. They weren't going to work well. They couldn't deal with the fact that they actually have to disclose revenue sharing. And, you know, the worst traits that a business can have is arrogance. You know, you're only as good as the service you provide. And if you're arrogant, you think you're the, you know, God's gift to ERISA, God's gift to 401k plans. You know, my old law firm, when I was in law school, and I saw they have the form that they fill out for people who are interested to be law firm associates. I mean, that was an impressive name. It meant something. At one point, it was the top law firm on Long Island. Now it's probably not even the top 10 anymore. And, you know, you just can't sit there and just die. You just have to understand what's going on in the marketplace and change with the times.
Sure. I think arrogance is a part of it, too. I'm not sure if you brought that up. I mean, folks... They think that they've got it all figured out, right? Like it's worked. Why change it? We know what we're doing. And while, you know, I think confidence and certainty and you know belief in oneself is important. It also is sort of the safe route in the near term, right? Why risk anything? Why be wrong? You know, there's a challenge. There's an exposure to innovate. And I think, you know, fortune favors the bold, you know, to quote a Detroit saying these days, at least. You know, you got to have some onions in the business world. This is big boy pants time, and you can't wait. You know, I think I mentioned this once before. One of my favorite MLK quotes is, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's essentially you have to have the courage to convictions, and you know, that's just it. If my son ever listens to this when he's older, you know, when he's kind of throwing a little fit and he's screaming in a high-pitched voice, and please don't misinterpret any of this as sexist, but I do tell him, you know, grab his onions and be a man. And I think that concept of being brave and sort of muscling through is lost a little bit in today's world, and certainly in today's corporate world.
Exactly.
So what else we got, bud? Does that cover it?
I think that really covers it. We went 40 minutes, and you know, I think
that's about right. What do you get, about 42 minutes out of standard programming with commercials?
Without the commercials, 42 minutes. Last few episodes, we've been a little bit shorter, you know, Tampa Bay, it was St. Pete when we were there, you know, that sort of stuff. But yeah, we gave a good 40 minutes, and we talked 7 minutes about that 401k conference. So that's that. Exactly. So we gave everybody their money's worth, even though they got this podcast for free. But there we go.
We gave the people what they wanted.
Exactly. And they wanted to hear me, you know, complain about Lois for 40 minutes. Until next week, it's Ari and Dan saying so long. Take care.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy the basketball. Take care, guys.